From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means a sense of balance in body, mind, and spirit. And now we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So keeping freedom on hold is usually a choice, consciously or subconsciously, that many of us, most of us, if not all of us, make at certain points in our lives. And today's topic is, I think, one of the main reasons that many of us do keep that sense of freedom on hold in our lives. And today's topic is about the power of forgiveness. And many of us really choose to hold on and hold on and hold on to our self-righteous indignation that we've been wronged in some way, shape, or form, or that if we finally forgive somebody or something in our lives, somehow we are going to lose power over that person or thing. And that usually is the way my mind has functioned in the past and the way a lot of people I know, including many of my clients. Very often when I suggest to a client that we work on forgiveness, there is this really incredulous reaction or shocking reaction. And I'm going to read a paragraph from a book that was recently released by my guest today. His name is David Ault, and his book is called Where Regret Cannot Find Me. And it's a series of essays from the spiritual path. And he writes on page 76 in his chapter on forgiveness, "For many, the word forgiveness has a negative, energetic punch to it. It conjures up thoughts of sacrifice, caving in, being a doormat, or condoning inexcusable behavior. When we do forgive, we often feel the winds of spiritual superiority wafting from Mount Righteousness. They blow their message of, yes, we all know you screwed up, but I, in my infinite enlightenment, forgive you." End quote. Now that, to me, is a very clear way of saying how most of us react to the idea of forgiveness. And like I said before, it usually comes from that place of self-righteousness when we do forgive. Just the other day, I had a couple came in who I haven't actually seen for a couple of years, and now they're coming in because things are at crisis point, and it was very clear to me that the husband was already almost both feet out of the relationship, and I think was turning now to their old therapist as a way of making that completion easier and not having to take personal responsibility for the fact that this is a choice he's making. And very often people go into therapy as a couple under the pretext of, we're going to try and work this through, when one or both of them may have already decided the work's done as far as the relationship is concerned. So basically, I got that, and I asked him to, you know, speak his truth about it, you know, tell the truth faster. And the truth was, and he finally admitted it, that he really doesn't see much more work that can be done on keeping the relationship together. He wants out. And actually was able to own up to the fact that a lot of his behaviors were manipulative and a way of forcing the issue. And apologized and asked for her forgiveness for that. Now, that's not something she was in that moment ready to do. And the whole idea of me saying to them, at a certain point, the two of you, in order to find some semblance of peace in your lives, will need to come to a point of forgiveness, or you're going to be carrying this around forever. Now, on an intellectual level, they both got this. On an emotional level, for them much too soon to even go in that direction, which I understand. And that's basically what today's show is going to be about, the power of forgiveness and the power that not forgiving maintains over us in our choices and decisions, our sense of health and well-being mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And usually when I'm doing a show and I've picked a topic and I have a guest, I usually look back on my website into the archives to see which shows I've done in the past with a similar or same topic. And, you know, they tend over 3 years. If you go to my website, you can listen to any show I've done over the last 3 years because they're all archived. And I was really shocked to see that this is the first time in over 3 years I'm actually doing a show about forgiveness. Even though in many of the shows on relationships, on a lot of other issues, forgiveness is something I've discussed, but this is the first time, and it really surprised me, since it's such a core part of the work that I do on myself and with my clients. So I'm really grateful that a friend of mine, who I've known, David, I don't know if you realize we've known each other since 1986 when I first moved to L.A. and attended my first lecture with Marianne Williamson at the Highland and Franklin church there, and Alliance was performing and you were up there performing. So I want all of you to meet someone I've known for a while and have just tremendous respect and affection for. His name is David Ault, and he is an author. He is an incredible visionary musician and lecturer and teacher and minister. So, David, thank you for being here, and welcome to the show today.
It's an honor to be on the line with you, Stuart, my old friend.
I realized that you were actually, when I went to that lecture, Marianne's topic that day was on victims. And it was the day after I had been robbed and mugged outside a club the night before, and it finally got me to one of her lectures, and her topic was victims. And there, I think all four of you were there then. I think Gary, you, Keith, and Jerry were all singing, if I remember correctly. And I was just blown away and enamored by the sound that was coming out of that group.
Yeah, I remember having a vivid memory of you standing up against a wall, because those meetings in the early days of Marianne Williamson used to be very crowded.
Yes.
Remember you made a specific request to the crowd, and as we entered into our time of meditation and prayer, and we've known each other ever since.
I'm touched and amazed that you actually remember that, because exactly what did happen. And Marianne, speaking of forgiveness, Marianne actually offered, she said, let's pray for the muggers. And if that's not moving into forgiveness, I was shocked when she said that. Let's pray for the muggers, because what she said was, think about the pain they must be in to have done something like that and to live a life like that. And basically, that's what you talk about in this chapter on forgiveness, which is basically about forgiveness means moving into understanding. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, your technician just told me he's getting some feedback, so I didn't quite hear the full question.
Okay.
So
Well, what Marianne had done that day was, when I talked about the mugging and said that I was new to town and stuff, she said, you know, let's all pray with Stuart. Let's pray for the muggers. Let's pray for some healing for them about what they must be going through to behave like this and to treat other people like this.
Right.
And it took me and a lot of people aback, because at that point in my journey, it wasn't something I would have thought to do. And in your book, you talk about the power of forgiveness comes from moving into understanding and compassion.
Yeah. You know, I like you were mentioning in your opening talk this hour about how there are just certain topics that are just, I don't know, they create an energetic buzz that have a preconceived conditional response in most people, and forgiveness is right up there at the top of the list. And like you, whenever I approach that subject with people, I see a resistance. And I thought, what is that about? And I think it's that they automatically go into this place of, this is going to be hard. Or they automatically go into a place of thinking that they have to become some doormat. And I know, as I write in my book, in that particular essay, my struggles with it came from my own internal history with injustice in terms of my upbringing. And I thought, what can I do to reframe this experience so that I don't approach it from that warrior aspect, almost as if I have to put on all of this armor before I can even begin the process of forgiveness. And for me, it was creating a visual of something that I call a row of human awareness. And in that row of human awareness, there are all these different seats. And one, you know, at one end of the row are the mass murderers and the people who've committed the most heinous crimes. And as you work your way along that row to the other end, then you have the more elevated consciousness-oriented folks and those who are working towards the highest evolution that they can in their humanness. And so it covers an entire spectrum. And the thing is what I realized is that at any given point in our lives, we have all sat in that chair, and all of those seats in that row at one point. And people will argue with me about that, and they say, I've never committed a murder, or I've never robbed anybody, such as your situation. But the thing is that we've all generated those feelings. For instance, we may not have ever murdered anyone, but I can rest assured that we've all hated at some point or another. So it's going to the emotion and the feeling that stirs those actions and developing some sense of understanding.
Right.
And so when I approach it from that regard, or explain it from that regard, I say, it's not about condoning the behavior, it's trying to understand the reason why they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something very liberating and very free inwardly for us that breaks loose from any kind of shackles of injustice when we look at it that way. And we go, okay, I don't condone what they do. It hurt. And I don't ever want to be in that position again. But if I pull myself out of the story and look at it from a place of understanding, yes, I can understand why someone would hate, because I have hated. Yes, I can understand why someone would rob because they felt desperate, because I have felt desperate. And in that way, we began to set ourselves free. And so it's really rare that I actually use the word forgiveness anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, let's try a different word. Let's try understanding. And I know it works for me.
Well,
I think that was so long ago, perhaps with you, was let's understand the reason why the robber robs, and pray for liberation and freedom from that sense of desperation.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first got out of graduate school, I've mentioned this on the show a number of times. In fact, I think it was last week. I was hired as a counselor at a long-term drug abuse treatment program in Lake Worth, Florida. And a lot of the clients that were in the program were heroin addicts and things like that. And, you know, here's this basically naive and experienced counselor coming fresh out of graduate school dealing with all this hardcore street smart people. And, you know, they do their testing. You know, it's like, you know, who are you to be counseling us? You know, did you ever shoot up? And the truth is, I've never done acid. I've never done coke. I've never shot up anything. You know, that sort of stuff. And they said, well, who are you to be counseling us? And I looked at them and I said to them, I said, I know what it feels like to want to numb what I'm feeling. I know what it feels like to feel pain and fear. I know what it feels like to want to go hide somewhere and not be in the experience of what I'm experiencing. That much I can relate to. And I think that's exactly what you're saying.
Exactly.
And they got it. And we actually worked really well together. And I never had to put a needle in my arm to do that, mm-hmm. thank God. So, you know, this whole concept of understanding, you know, a lot of people, when they think in terms of forgiveness, again, their first thought is, well, if I forgive this person, then I'm going to be exposing myself to the same hurt and pain and everything else. And what I say to people is, forgiveness doesn't mean you bring this person back into your life. If it's so dysfunctional and so inappropriate, you know, forgiveness means finding a place of peace and neutrality, if you want to look at it that way.
Well, and I think it's when we forgive, we actually set free from our need to recreate that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that's another liberating aspect of being in that. You know, and it's so easy for you and I or anybody else to sit and to have a conversation about forgiveness. It's another thing to really put it into practice, because there's not a soul on this planet that hasn't had the experience of deep-rooted injustice. And many of us to this day have carried those experiences and that hurt and that pain for decades. And I know that I am constantly surprised at the level of clearing that I continue to do in my own life. I am amazed at how, regardless of how much book knowledge I might have or how much I think that I'm seasoned in terms of my spiritual path, I'm forever releasing and shedding and letting go. And especially when it comes to our immediate families, because the dynamics go so deep. And we may operate and function from a place of growth when we're not in their physical presence. But have you ever noticed that when we are put back into that physical presence, that sometimes we revert to form? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how we go, oh, wow, there's still a lot here to look at, examine, and understand.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, it's like people fear, you know, like say a client or someone that we know that has been abused as a child, either sexually or physically or emotionally, mm-hmm. and the whole idea of forgiving mom or dad, you know, around these things does not necessarily mean having to still be around mom or dad. In other words, forgiveness also can lead to setting appropriate boundaries so that you're feeling more empowered and taking better care of that little boy or girl that I think you're talking about. Sorry about that technical glitch for my listeners.
We forgive the
That's
the phone
right. The practice in forgiveness right now with the technology.
Yes. I don't know if you heard my cliffhanger, which was appropriate, but I said I was wondering if you ever remembered what Marianne used to say about that.
About which?
In regards to when we forgive, it doesn't mean that we have to give up our boundaries with particular people.
Okay, so that much did go out over the air. Okay,
she used to say.
What did Marianne used to say about
it? Well, she used to say, you know, because you forgive them doesn't mean you have to have lunch with them.
That's right.
And I used to love that because it made it so clear that, yes, we can do our inner work and we still get to create specific boundaries that are healthy.
Right. And that is one of the things, I think it's the main, one of the main things I hear people mention when I bring up the concept of forgiveness, or as you call understanding and compassion, is that fear that they're going to be having, having to take the higher road and be in the presence of the abuser again. And I think it's very important and worth restating that going to a place of forgiveness and finding that place of peace within yourself so that the experience and the individual that we're talking about no longer has that subtle and emotional power over you anymore, that you are feeling more empowered to take care of that little boy or girl.
Absolutely.
And say, you know what, okay, dad's not changed, he's still drinking, or mom's still abusive, and I'm going to get past that. I'm going to go out and play with that little kid inside of me, and I'm choosing not to be in that adult's presence anymore. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is about empowerment. That, to me, is about a true healing that allows you to get on with your life again from a place that's filled with more peace and joy.
And I personally have both experiences in my life. There are those people that I have chosen to bless them and let them go off and have their own experience, and at the same time take responsibility for how I feel in regards to whatever went on in the relating aspect of our individual lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other situation where, for instance, with my mother, she's 84. Many of my siblings have passed away, and I am one of the chief caregivers. And I like to think of her as my greatest teacher this go around. And so there is a responsibility that I feel that I choose to take in terms of still being in that life with her, even though it was a very rocky relationship, an abusive one, early on in my years. And yet I am constantly letting go of the past and the history and approaching my dealings with her from a place of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been a phenomenal, phenomenal opportunity of depth and putting into practice all that I talk about, all that I write about, all that I sing about from her and my experience with her in regards to subtle and grandiose things, from just learning not to take things personally, and then to look at her and question sometimes what must her life have been like in order for her to react and respond and make the choices that she did.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time to look at the time frame growing up in the Depression and growing and understanding and looking at her own growing up years in an environment of abuse, and realizing that there's such a tremendous opportunity for me to cut the chain of allegiance to that and not perpetuate it.
Mm-hmm.
And to instill within her, maybe not by verbal words, but just by a rock solid presence that allows her to be who she needs to be, and at the same time be empowered within myself to not take it on. And again, that comes from years of practice, and I know that it's easier said than done.
Well, it's kind of like what I say often. It's like, you know, healing is a process, not necessarily an event. And so, you know, as we're going through this, you know, those of us that are trying to be as conscious as we can along the journey,
right,
have successes and get to that place that we've been striving to get to, and occasionally slip back into, you know, the older, very familiar patterns when we least expect it. It's like, you know, I'm 55 years old and I go visit my mom, and all of a sudden she's still relating to me like I'm 16. When are you coming home? What are you going to be doing? Blah, 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 blah. You know, that sort of stuff. Are you taking care of yourself? There are certain aspects of who she is that I've come to understand that this is her being mom.
Yeah.
And rather than resent it or rather than get upset with it, we usually end up laughing about it. We usually turn it into something where, you know, we make a game out of it, and we know we're doing it because we both end up just having a good laugh about it.
Sure. And in this idea of creating a row of understanding, a row of human awareness, I look at people and I watch their behavior now, and sort of as a mindful game in my own spiritual practice, I say, I wonder what seat they're sitting in.
Mm-hmm.
Are they sitting in a seat of fear, and that's why they're reacting and responding and behaving the way that they are?
Mm-hmm.
And it brings about a sense of detachment and a sense of non-judgment. And I can say that sometimes I'm better at it than others, but one of the other liberating things that I wrote about in another essay in my book, Where Regret Cannot Find Me, is, and this is kind of out there for some people, but for me it's been one of the most transformative concepts, and that is I personally believe that we choose to come into this lifetime. And we choose our parents, and we choose the lessons that are presented to us. And as we're doing this, I like to fancy the notion or the visual that we stand in a circle of a soul group, people that are going to be sharing this experience with us. And they say to us, David, Stuart, what is it that you want to have happen in this lifetime? What is it that you want to most learn and experience and transcend? And for me, maybe it's patience, maybe it's true compassion for the human spirit. And so they say, okay, I'm going to come back and I'm going to play this particular role. And I'm going to do this particular thing. We're going to have this interaction, and it's going to be very painful. But what it's going to do is it's going to cause you to be a seeker. It's going to propel you to reach out, to want to learn more, to do something in order to move you into that space of becoming everything that you say you want to be. And I know it's a little out there for some people, but if you think about it, that means that, in my opinion, that those people who have been the largest perpetrators of our grief or the largest perpetrators of our pain, what if we looked at them and reframed them as being those that loved us the most?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, I'm going to come back and I'm going to play this role. I'm going to be the ex-husband or the ex-wife or the abusive parent or the difficult neighbor or the horrific employee, because that behavior is the very thing that was the catalyst for us to reach out and begin to develop and grow and be who we were.
In other words, to be able to thank that individual for actually participating in the script that
Absolutely.
Taught you the lesson that you really needed to learn in this lifetime.
So they were the perfect player.
Mm-hmm.
And man, when I decided to start looking at it that way, when I started to look at all the individuals in my life, I came from a very abusive household. And when I started to look at the individuals within my immediate family who were the biggest perpetrators of that abuse, and I thought, what if they were the ones who loved me the most? And they said, we're going to come back and we're going to participate in this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to, let's say, lower our vibration so much that we won't recognize who we really are. And you're going to have to do that for us. There was something so beyond anything that could be labeled in the English language, above and beyond freedom for me. And that compassion and understanding took on a whole new level. And I know that that's such a renegade approach for most people, but it was really necessary for me, because I kept putting out an intention in the world saying, I want to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be somebody that doesn't just talk about these things, but I want to live them so that I can come from that place of understanding and compassion and be able to say, I've been there, and I know that, and I've come out on the other side. It's that other joke, I think, that many of us used to here about, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not stop and build a condo there. And I think it's that idea of is we're supposed to move through these experiences and come out on the other side.
Mm-hmm. I think you know me long enough to know that I do agree with your approach to this. But if people have difficulty with the idea of we choose our parents and all this other stuff, that even if they just go to the place where they can acknowledge the fact that people are in their lives for whatever reason and are the teachers and the catalyst to the learning of the lessons and the healing of the pains, that they could still get to a place of saying, I feel grateful that I've come out the other side of it and that individual came into my life to push me to the level of consciousness that I'm now at.
Sure.
So it doesn't, you know, to me it's like, you know, like I said, I personally agree with your approach to it, but for those that have difficulty with the first half of it can still get to the place of healing and gratitude of the second half.
How many stories have we heard about people coming out of, let's say, failed marriages or abusive situations only to really discover what their true passion and purpose in life is.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know? And it's like being raised Jewish as I was, even as a kid, I never understood why Christianity made Judas such a villain in Jesus' story. If Jesus came here to die for the sins of humanity and to hang on the cross, why aren't they thanking Judas for playing his role and helping things along to what Jesus came here to do? And I think that's kind of what you're saying, in a sense.
And it takes an ability to lose our allegiance to blame,
mm-hmm.
to really begin to comprehend and even invite something like that into our awareness.
Right. Well, and the same thing with Christianity's hit on the Jews during that time, too.
Sure.
If that's the case, and the Jews were preordained to play their role in this, why aren't the Jews embraced for having subconsciously or consciously played out the role in the life of Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of all these centuries of hate and anger and blame. You know, you even, there's another quote here that I really like, and it has to do here. It's about innocence. Refusing to understand or forgive is like taking that precious vial and tossing it away. We have the power to stop the repeated patterns and change our lives back to the vibrancy of a child. And to me, that's like seeing the innocence in everybody's role in this and seeing the childlike innocence that existed in the individual before they became the monster in your life.
And for me, I think, too, it's just about coming to a crossroads and saying, do I really want to talk about being free or do I want to do something about it?
Mm-hmm.
And do I want to break the self-imposed barriers of my humanness?
Mm-hmm.
And recognize that my time on this planet is precious. And every single day is this canvas on which I have an opportunity to create and be and do everything that I set out to do. And it's every day is an opportunity for me to move in the direction of that dream and that expanded vision that I feel inside. And that means setting aside any grievances, any mistakes and withholds that we have about ourselves, about our righteous anger, our broken story, and it's about moving forward and embracing the freedom right here and right now. It's not tomorrow. It doesn't have to be next month or next year. It can really be right here, right now. And I believe that because I experience it. I get something tangible and something sustainable from that. And I know that that's a part of my mission and my purpose, and I want so desperately for the rest of the planet to be able to experience the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is choice.
It's a choice that we make. I think one of my favorite lessons in the Course in Miracles is I could choose peace instead of this.
Exactly.
And in that moment, I could be angry, or I could choose peace right now instead of the anger. I could choose peace instead of living in the pain. I could choose peace instead of revenge and retaliation. And it is about getting to the place of being able to make a conscious choice.
And as difficult as it might seem to do, it's such a better alternative.
It's like, you know, the old saying. It's like, you know, peace on the planet starts with peace within myself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I can choose peace within me, if I can get to that place, then I'm creating a little pocket of peace in the world that will have a ripple effect, and I'll attract other people who want to learn how I did it and start teaching other people how they did it.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think sometimes people have this sense of futility of, well, what's the point? It's not going to matter anyway. People of the power of one.
Say that again.
One single act does exactly what you said, set off this ripple effect that we sometimes don't even know or hear about.
Well, I totally agree with that. Talk about you in terms of on this journey that you've been on. You've always been an inspiration to me, and not just the singing, but because you go for it. And I've known you through some really difficult times in your life, and I've known you through good times in your life. And while we're not in touch a lot, I've been watching you. Anyway, I know throughout you keep striving. You became a minister in Church of Religious Science. You kept producing new CDs and out there giving concerts. And I know that you've taken very seriously your purpose of being a guide and being a teacher. And if people have not heard your music, I'm really encouraging them to go to davidalt.com and just on a whim, just go ahead and order one of David's CDs. My personal favorite is The Healing Bridge. I have Traveling with the Angels, and then there is Morning in the Healing Bridge. And I love The Healing Bridge, even though all of them are great. But how have you... what has the music and your ministry been to you in terms of keeping you focused or helping you fulfill your purpose?
Well, I think in regards to music, I find that people who don't respond to anything else respond to music.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been so blessed to have the privilege to create a union of all of these different elements of communication, of creative expression, from the music to the writing to the public speaking to I take people on sacred site travel adventures every year. So it's become this huge umbrella of expression, but always undercurrent is the music, because it was my roots. I was an actor for many years in New York and L.A. and worked on the stage, and it's something that will always be a part of me, and I know that above and beyond that, it has been my introduction and my way-shower on this path. And so as big as some of the other elements in my life get, that will always be there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the music goes back to your childhood?
Yeah, I came singing out of the womb, as my mom says, and they haven't been able to shut me up since.
Thank God.
So, in fact, I put so much energy and time into this book, I haven't had a recording out in over 5 years.
Wow.
And I have a new one coming out at the end of March, so I'm pretty excited about that.
So it's coming out the end of March.
Yeah.
And I know that you have one of your spiritual journeys. You just got back from Thailand, I
believe. Oh, my God. I got back from
going
Thailand
to Alaska.
Thailand and Cambodia, and it was just life-altering. It was one of the most amazing experiences. And now I've got another, I'm going to do a cruise in August to Alaska, and would love for people to come and sign up and be a part of that. It's a 7-day cruise, and as many people know, it's one of the most breathtaking areas in the world.
Now, when you do these trips, you're facilitating spiritual experiences and
doing lectures. We do workshops. We do all kinds of things, and in a cruise format, which I've done several times, it's we keep it lighthearted and fun. So we explore our spiritual deepening in a very fun and enjoyable way. And they can find all that information out on my website at davidalt.com.
And your company is called The Conscious Company.
Right.
And I love your use of your name. Like my brother, his name is David or David, and in Hebrew, I assume, it's means beloved.
It does.
And alt means old, as in the beginning of my name, Alt Schuler.
Uh-huh.
So old beloved is who you are, and your old soul is certainly been reinforced with that name.
Oh, well, thank you.
You truly are beloved.
Thanks.
So people can actually get information and order your book, order your CDs, and like I said, if you've never heard of David Alt before and you just want a treat, go ahead and just trust Spirit and order at least one of his CDs off his website and stuff. You won't regret it. But you can do that at David Alt. If you want more information about the trip coming up in August to Alaska, you can get information on that site also. So I want to make sure everybody knows that. And as a reminder to people, too, this show will be archived along with all the other shows I've done for the last 3 years. If you want to make sure somebody else hears what we've talked about today, even with the technical glitches, on forgiveness, the show will be up on the website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and for people to listen to David or any of the other shows I've done over the last 3 years, they're all on there. So.
And I'd also like to mention, too, that sometimes when I get a huge surge of activity, and maybe if I personally run out of stock, that all of my stuff is available through Amazon.com as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm curious also about Alliance's old tapes and stuff. Is the Hay House still selling that, or is there any place people...
You know, they never... weren't aware of that. I started in this whole New Thought spiritual realm with a woman by the name of Louise Hay.
Right.
And in a vocal trio group called Alliance. And it was my introduction into this amazing world, which I will forever be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two members made their transitions through the AIDS crisis in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
And that music sort of lost circulation, if you will. But I'm looking at, because believe it or not, it's been 20 years, and I'm looking at trying to create a compilation CD that I can make available and sort of remaster and go in and select some of those old favorites. Because I still get requests,
yeah,
even to this day.
Well, you know, I still facilitate the hayride, and occasionally we still put some of those old chants and some of those old tapes, and I love myself the way I am. Actually, the group requested that we start using it again at the end of the meeting. It's wonderful stuff, and it's like I said, it was my introduction to you back in 86, because it was Alliance that was singing at Marianne's lecture then, and you guys sang often at her lectures along with Louise's groups, and I know you traveled with Louise, George Jampolsky, and a number of other great teachers along the way.
Yeah, it was an amazing process for me, because I did not grow up, as I think many of us did, in any kind of a metaphysical background.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in southeast Texas in a very rigid, oriented kind of hellfire and damnation background.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of it as becoming divinely discontented with that approach in my college years, and just sort of made a vow that I didn't want to have anything to do with church or God or religion, and thought that I had pretty much distanced myself from that. And I find it fascinating that now, after all these years, I'm a minister, but from a different aspect. And it's the most important thing in my life, my communication with spirit, with God, and I'm grateful, like I said, like we talked about for our topic today. I'm grateful for that background, because I appreciate it and I understand it, and I can look at the evolution and I can say, wow, that was perfect.
Well, I think, as long as we're talking about forgiveness, I think core to most people's journey, for many people, it's about coming to a place of forgiveness with whatever religious organization they grew up with.
Exactly. And that's a big one for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one for me. I recently had an experience in my immediate family with a suicide, and I had to go back to Texas again. And I took my 84-year-old mom to a church service, and it was the church that I was born and raised in, and I sat there with her and listened to this person talk about the damnation and all of that kind of stuff, and sort of the hairs on my back bristled a little bit, you know, but at the same time, I thought, wow, I can let them have their process, and I can honor and say whatever works for another individual, great. And at the same time go, it doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And find a way not to make anybody else wrong.
Yeah.
And to me, that's been a measurable blessing for me in my own growth.
And, well, I think the essence of culture really is about honoring and respecting everyone, no matter what their beliefs or approach to things.
Sure.
When it comes to church, and unfortunately, most people in the Judeo-Christian culture do not practice that. You know, and again, that's where.
Well, one of the things about religious science is that we honor all paths,
mm-hmm.
and if I say that, then I know that I'm going to be put in situations where I get to really make that true for me. I get to honor all paths and not make anybody wrong. And so I still work on that from time to time.
Yep, I think we all are.
Yeah.
I want to read one last comment. And it's at the very end of the chapter on forgiveness. And it says, first, define what seat you are residing in on the row of awareness and begin to provide a bit of self-directed compassion. Choose the power of understanding to forgive the past and appreciate the journey that got you this far. Honoring everything as a divine teacher helps unlock the chains that restrict freedom, liberating us from mental and emotional imprisonment. This freedom gives wings to your pain. Release it with love and be done. And I think that's the essence of everything we've been talking about today, and I know it's the core of your own journey, and I like to believe mine also. And again, David, I really want to thank you. I know you're up in Reno right now getting ready for a concert tomorrow, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for taking the time to do the show, and I'd love to have you on again, and we can cover another chapter in your book or anything
Sounds
else
great.
You want to talk about.
Okay.
So thank you so much, and I love you a lot. And so for all of you listening, again, you can hear the show again in about a week. It'll be up on the archives at TellTheTruthFaster.com. This is Stuart Altshuler on KXAM in Phoenix, 1310 AM. Thanking you for listening, and tell your friends about the show, and I'll be here again next week with Guy Finley. So have a great weekend, everyone.
Up high.